Good evening, Browns fans, and welcome to yet another edition of OBR Weekly. My name is Barry McBride. I am the publisher of the OBR, and that man sitting right over there, he's a legend, Fred Greetham. How you doing, Fred?
Yeah, I'm good. You ought to be commended. You didn't mute your mic after 2 weeks off, and you're all subdued, and I'm excited. I got my bright orange shirt on. We're ready to go. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. I finally showed up this week. Made it a special week with the OG hosts of the OBR Weekly joining the legend. If you're new to the show, we got a lot of people already hanging out with us tonight. But if you are new to the show, this show is really powered by your comments and questions. I bring some with me, but yours are more important than mine. So please hit us up in the YouTube or Twitch or Facebook or X, Zitter comments with your questions. And we will jump all over those and comments for the legend, Mr. Freddie Greetham. Fred, I know you and I didn't have a chance to talk draft last week. Mike Keefe was more than ably filling in for me, but what's your 50,000-foot view of how the Browns did, just to fill me in? Did you like the draft overall?
You know, it's always tainted without a first-round pick, and
right,
you tend to have guys that, you know, unless you're a real draft guru, a lot of names you don't even know or you're not that familiar with. But it's kind of what I expected. I asked Andrew Berry a question on the pre-draft presser. It actually was the one where he answered with Taylor Swift and he threw all those pop culture icons right in there. That was my question. But then he answered it in the second half saying that they really go into it with an eye on the future, but also now. This roster, by my estimation, they had 19 of 22 positions already filled before the offseason. And one of those was Jordan Elliott, was listed as the starting defensive tackle. And, right, you know, I really felt Shelby Harris or Maurice Hurst were probably better or ahead of him, but he got the nod. And that's why I, you know, called for them keeping him. But then really when it's all said and done, the only two guys really not here that were starters were Anthony Walker and Sione Taki-Taki. So going into a draft with your lineup pretty much set, you address those moves with free agency and trades. And so they really could go anywhere. We talked about it in the draft. And I really think that when you're drafting in the second round and you already have your starting lineups pretty much set, not too many guys are going to be able to step in and make a big impact. You think last year there were some defensive tackles, I think the Eagles took, big name guys, and they didn't really have big impacts. It takes a while for most positions, but with that said, yeah, I think I like the pick of Hall. Obviously, you and I were big fans of that. I said it in our Studio 54. I actually said they'd take him in the second round if the other wide receiver, you know, wasn't there, or a third round if he was still available. As far as Zach Zinter, to me, he seems like a plug-and-play guy. You know, not flashy, but when you hate to say it watching the Buckeyes against Michigan, but the offensive line for Michigan just handed the Buckeyes up and down for the last couple years.
Yep.
And I didn't know much about their names, but when I find out Zinter was the captain, the leader of that top-ranked offensive line, you got to feel pretty good about it now that he's with the Browns. He probably won't play this year unless what happens a lot with the Browns, we have injuries to Joel Bitonio or Wyatt Teller or whatever. But I do think that it's kind of like a DeJuan Jones. He could plug in and play for the next 8 to 10 years. You really need to address the depth All you had at guard backup was Michael Dunn.
Right.
And you let him become a free agent. So, and then the other picks, I was a little intrigued with the Jamari Thrash. Guy had some production at Louisville. Andrew Berry just keeps swinging for the fences with in the draft. I think he's drafted five straight years, and he's drafted a wide receiver. You can pretty much count on him to draft a wide receiver. And I don't fault him. Take a swing. Maybe you hit on him. Maybe you don't. It's a fifth-round pick. You got Hollywood Higgins in the fifth round. You know, maybe he could get some production. I really think he'll battle David Bell maybe for a roster spot. Mm-hmm. And then Nathaniel Watson kind of intrigued me. I mean, I didn't know much about him, but it pops out when he's SEC Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, the last I knew, SEC's usually playing for the national title. And I realized you got Georgia, Alabama, LSU, all those teams with good offenses. So the defense on Mississippi State was probably on the field a lot, so he'd have good stats. But still, that's pretty good production going up against the best. Led the conference in tackles, tied for the lead in sacks as a linebacker. And Andrew Berry talked about him being – he compared him to Sione Takitaki. So if you can get a six-round guy to, you know, to step in there. And then you got some specialists, kind of like, I think, Harden, you know, a slot cornerback. Maybe he'll battle Cameron Mitchell, mm-hmm. and maybe you'll see what you have there. And then another defensive tackle. So from the big picture, I just think it's mostly looking down the road for developmental guys for next year or the following year, which you have to do. Mm-hmm. And realistically, Mike Hall's probably the only one that's going to step in and play. This year in the rotation, but the nice thing, he doesn't have to. You got those three 30-something defensive tackles, you know, that are playing ahead of him, but you have to address the age, so that's what you got with Ika and Hall now.
Right. Yeah, very happy with the Hall pick. Obviously, you and I both wouldn't say that we called it, but we wanted it. Michael Hall with their first pick. Fumble 13 points out. I did jump at the Hall pick, only an inch, but you know, gravity is not my friend. Gravity has never been my friend. But that's as high as I can go. But very happy about that. And you know, I personally think it was a good draft. Now, PFF is among the folks giving the Browns lousy grades for their draft. You know, they say that they improved their team the least. I think they did tremendously, but you look at some of these other teams in the AFC North really helped to improve themselves, Fred, in the draft this year. Are you concerned at all with what the Ravens did and maybe what the Steelers did in this year's draft?
Well, you know, they usually draft pretty well, but I think the Ravens lost upward close to 20 guys in free agency and really had a lot of room to grow. They also, I think these teams had a first-round pick. And when you don't have a first-round pick, you know, it's hard to get a good grade because, like I said, these aren't household names. I mean, a guy in the middle to the two-thirds down in the second round isn't going to be, you know, a name everybody knows other than Ohio State fans, you know, with Michael Hall,
right.
An offensive lineman. So those, yeah, I mean, you can't grade them. I know they all do it because you have to do something like that to fill up, you know, the space in the computer and everybody right. is trying to get clicks and stuff. But you really don't know for a couple, 3 years if they were any good or not. So it appears that, you know, the competitors in the division did well. They always seem to do well. Every year they come out of it and you go, wow, they grab some guys that could make a difference. But with the Browns, again, when you start at 54, I just really don't know what else they could have done. I don't know at 54 even what big names – what guy could you have taken that you'd say, okay, that was a home run, and now he's going to be a Pro Bowler this year as a rookie.
Right, you know? Right.
Whoever they draft, it's probably not going to play. And that's good. That means you got stability.
Right, right. I think Hall's going to, you know, get some chances, and I think he's going to make an impact. And I'm very excited by the pick. You know, he'll be in there in third and long situations and causing some havoc, you know, next to Myles Garrett, I think. But at any rate, thanks for your view on the draft in general. I know you went over it last week with Mike. Let's go over some of the articles you wrote this week as you take an opportunity after the draft to sort of look back on what the Browns did in six key areas that you wanted to, you felt that were important to the team to work on during the offseason. Parts one and two of that series are coming tomorrow, I think, but we have parts three through six that we wanted to talk about. Part three was on the edge rushers. Now, you gave the Browns an A for their work at edge for retaining Garrett, Smith, and Okoronkwo. They brought that group back. Alex Wright is starting to come into his own. They've got some interesting players behind them with Isaiah McGuire, for example. Do you expect better results in 2024 from that group in terms of sacks and so on and so forth than the group had in 2023, or do you expect more of the same?
Well, the reason I gave him an A-minus was because Za'Darius Smith was re-signed. Going into the offseason back in March, I felt this was a key area that you had to either get a free agent, trade for a free agent, or acquire one that was as good, if not better, than Za'Darius Smith, maybe a younger version. They chose to sign him to a two-year deal, and so that turns out to be the only move at edge rusher they made this offseason. The reason I started with an A, and I think I downed it to A minus just because that was the only move they made, but I thought maybe they'd add somebody else. But they do have the other guys, the other five under contract. I feel better about the group depth with Alex Wright, the way he came on, you know, down the stretch last year. He was playing as well as any of them on the defensive line, you know, even close to, you know, Myles Garrett. He had five sacks in five games in a row. And he started the year on injury list because he had knee surgery after the Hall of Fame game. So he got behind. So you have the top three, you know, Garrett, Okoronkwo, and Smith. And right, so you have four solid defensive ends, and Isaiah McGuire, who played a little last year, returns, as well as a couple other guys, Sam Kamara and Alani Phelps will battle for a spot. But as far as moves, yeah, I mean, you always want more, but I think Za'Darius Smith, I've always liked him. I actually thought he would had more sacks last year. I think he had 5.5. I expected him with opposite Garrett to have almost double digits or better because that's what he had done before. I know he was dinged up some, but his second year here in the system, and I just know Jim Schwartz praised him every week that you guys look too much at sacks, but on our score sheet, he's filling it up with pressures and all kinds of minutia that they keep track of. So that's good enough for me. If they felt at all, we got to go get this guy and make sure he doesn't leave. I feel much better about him opposite Garrett than even Jadeveon Clowney coming off the 9-sack year he had here. So, yeah, I mean, I think Smith is a very, very underrated player. You know, if you're just looking at last year, from all the people I talked to in the organization about him.
So maybe some splashier stats from him this year. We'll see. Michael Hall, I think, will make that group a little bit more impactful on passing situations. We'll wait and see. The fourth of those six steps was at running back. And obviously the Browns needed to make some moves with Nick Chubb injured. They've added Donta Foreman and Nyheim Hines. You gave them a B minus for their work at running back. What do you think they could have done better? Should they have gone out and drafted someone, or what do you think they should have done?
I thought they would have drafted a running back on the third day, like the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. But they signed an undrafted guy, Aiden Robbins. You know, I don't know if it's what they could have done better. I wrote this. I started this series before free agency, and it was a great unknown about Nick Chubb. To me, it's all about Nick Chubb. When will he be back? And there's really no timetable. Early on free agency, that told me when they were just going after guys and the reports were like Zach Moss was about the biggest name I heard they were talking with, and they only offered him a one-year deal. That to me was positive news that they felt Nick Chubb would return and they weren't going to go out and give a two-year or more contract to a running back. I think the philosophy will be going forward running back by committee. And you got Donta Foreman, similar to Kareem Hunt, maybe a little less tread on the tire. I believe he will take over the short yardage situation. They signed Nyheim Hines to be a returner primarily, kick and punt returner. But he is also a pass-catching specialist out of the backfield. I think you're going to see the Browns play a lot of spread offense, and I think he will be on the field until Chubb returns in passing situations, catching passes out of the backfield. And so I like the committee of Foreman and Hines to go with Jerome Ford and not relying just on Pierre Strong to be the third guy. So I think between Strong, Hines, Foreman, and Ford, they ought to be able to hold the fort down until Nick Chubb returns. I don't think any of those guys can – well, there's very few running backs in the league that can be like Nick Chubb, but – I think it affords them to let him get as healthy as possible and not bring him back until he's, you know, more than ready to play. So you have him for the second half of the season or even the last quarter of the season and the stretch run to try to make the playoffs. They ought to be able to stay in contention even without Nick Chubb for the first half of the season.
Right. I wish there was a ranking out there somewhere that would tell me how good these running backs are at picking up blitzes. I see the yards per carry and yards after contact and all that sort of stuff, but always underrated how good they are at picking up a blitz. At any rate, position number five was linebacker. Obviously, the Browns lost Taki Taki and Walker, replaced them with Jordan Hicks, Devin Bush. And in the draft, Nathaniel Bookie Watson. I wasn't around last week really to talk much about Watson, but how do you feel about this group versus last year's ensemble? Do you think it was a big leap forward, or is Devin Bush so much of a mystery that we can't really say yet?
Well, he is a mystery. I mean, you know, Andrew Berry likes guys that were coming out in the draft, and for whatever reason it didn't work out. We know the big thing with him, he's the top 10 pick of the Steelers, blew out his ACL, and hasn't really been the same. But now he's a couple years out, so, you know, he could really be a big acquisition. I'll say this right up front, much to the dismay of a lot of our followers. I know a lot of people were saying they got to draft a linebacker. They got to get a linebacker. They don't value linebackers like the fans do. They really, I mean, Andrew Berry even said that they really will be in only two linebackers on the field in most of their defensive schemes. And that's JOK and Jordan Hicks. Now that he didn't say that. I'm saying that those are the top two. Hicks is replacing the Anthony Walker role, the captain type, the team leader. And I think he's got a better better resume than Walker. I liked Anthony Walker, but he was getting older. He's getting slower. Jordan Hicks also has some age on him, but he'd had over 100 tackles the last 5 years. I think he's an upgrade over Anthony Walker. And so you have him and JOK as your two. In the base set with three, it'll probably be Devin Bush or Mohamed Diabate or Tony Fields or maybe even Nathaniel Watson all battling, you know, for playing time. But they're going to only play two linebackers in most any possibilities of passing defense, because you're going to have three corners or three safeties out there. And so it's just a matchup situation. That's what Jim Schwartz likes to do. So the reason I think I graded him a C, because it's just kind of average. I mean, you know, Jordan Hicks isn't like NFL player of the year or something like that. He's a good solid, but that was really the only commodity that I see him adding. And so I think it's a little bit of a, if you take Walker and Taki Taki losing and really only know of Hicks, that's kind of about the same, because you don't know what the other guys. You're kind of counting on Fields, Diabate, this Watson rookie, or what we don't know about Devin Bush to be better than Taki Taki or is as good. So to me, it's just kind of a middle of the road. Obviously, right. We haven't seen him at all. I'm looking forward this weekend to seeing Watson on the field just to see what he looks like. I was intrigued to get him in the sixth round. You wonder, okay, what's the problem with him? You heard some things about some character, but then you saw things that how smart he was, and they had a linebacker go down at Mississippi State, and before the game in the parking lot, they had him learn a new position.
Right.
He played it in the game. And then he also was at school or in college for 6 years, you know, might have been the six best years of his life, kind of like my college year. But what was the deal? So sometimes when, as we know, age guardrails, when somebody's been, you know, in college that long, they kind of drop down the draft board. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what you have in him and some of the other guys out there. So, yeah, I mean, the linebacker, I mean, I think they are as good as they were last year at the position overall, but I don't know if they really moved the needle a lot.
And you wouldn't really expect them to really go splashy at that position, because like you said, it's not highly valued like the defensive line is or the defensive backfield is, cornerback specifically for the Cleveland Browns. Okay, let's visit the last position before we talk about our friends from Core Home Fitness, and that's backup quarterback. Out goes Joe Flacco in an assortment of Walkers and Driscolls, and in come Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley. I give him a good grade for that move, but I'm not the huge Flacco fan that a lot of folks were. He had a marvelous run with the Browns last year, but I'm not a true believer, I guess. I'm sorry to say, but what are your thoughts on the bottom line here, Fred?
Well, again, I usually do a five-step to get back to the playoffs, and I'm addressing their starters.
Right.
I added a sixth one because I felt the quarterback was so important. We saw last year, and that's why I did backup quarterback as the sixth move. Joe Flacco was the fan favorite, and rightly so. I totally see what the Browns did. I mean, I put Flacco as the first choice, but I did have Winston on there as an option. I didn't really think they would go with a player that good, to be honest with you, or with the credentials of his background. We just saw last year how it ruined the season, you know, when you had four or five different quarterbacks. You could have won a game or two more. I think of that Ravens game. If you'd had a Joe Flacco or a backup quarterback that could step in and they could have beat the Ravens at home, they legitimately could have won the AFC North and had a home game in the playoff. So, you know, woulda, shoulda, but I give them credit that they don't want to get caught. They almost went the other way with a little overkill. I can tell you right now, they are not going to start the season with four quarterbacks on the roster. I mean, Tyler Huntley made the Pro Bowl one year, filling in for Lamar Jackson. So he's been Lamar Jackson's backup. So he's a pretty good backup quarterback. Yeah. Jameis Winston was the former number one overall pick in the draft and had some pretty good numbers in his early years. In fact, he had a resurrected year, I don't know, 19 or 20. DTR, I don't know if you really know what you have with him. So I don't think by any stretch of the means you can go into the season again saying he's my backup. So I like that approach. So we all know injuries are there. If one of the guys were to get hurt in the offseason or in training camp or in preseason, then you have a path to the other three being on the roster. But if all four are healthy, I see them doing what they did with Josh Dobbs and trading at least one of them for a draft pick to a team that might lose a quarterback in training camp or the preseason, and they'll recoup an asset there. As we always see, you know, Andrew Berry uses those fifth, sixth, seventh round picks in trades to acquire assets for the future. So I like what they did there. But the bottom line is we're talking about the backup quarterback. If Deshaun Watson doesn't stay on the field or doesn't play, the Browns are not going to get to the Super Bowl or accomplish what they want to accomplish. There's a lot of concern if they will anyway. But I do think, and I'm given the benefit of the doubt, that if he stays on the field, that they will win more games than they lose because he's out there. He'll win more games than any of these other backups would have. And so that's what it comes down to. We're talking about the backup, but yeah, I like what they did. I like Winston. I like Huntley. I mean, Winston's like 9 years younger than Flacco. And I think some people don't take into account how good the Browns offense is. And a veteran like Joe Flacco, I'm not taking anything away, but he just dropped into the cockpit there. And so Winston could, who knows, he could do the same type thing. You know, he's got a skill set. He's more mobile. He's more, has the arm, has pretty much everything that Flacco had, but he's 9 years younger. And then when you look at the entire thing, the room, what they're trying to accomplish, you know, last year you had Watson, Dobbs, Mond, and DTR, similar skill sets. And so that's kind of what you have to some degree this year. You have Watson, Huntley, Winston, and DTR again. So you have guys that are mobile, big arms, and they're going to run a spread offense. And I just think that the mobility factor is a little more important to them. Let's face it, guys, they didn't sign Joe Flacco till November 20th. And when there was really no other option, I mean, they could have done that way, way earlier in the season when you first had the injury, you know, to Watson. That was the third week of the year. So
it's not like Flacco was otherwise engaged. You know, he was available. Winston could cut down on the interceptions, and if he gets in there, he has a chance to do fairly well. But again, he needs to cut down on the mistakes. Hey, let's talk about our buddies from Core Home Fitness, who are sponsors of this program. You can find them at corehomefitness.com. I think that adjustable dumbbells are, you know, lightweight, are one of the best ways to stay in shape. You can tell because I'm so ripped. Check out their assortment of lifting equipment at Core Home Fitness. They've got the top-rated adjustable dumbbells by various sources, including the New York Times. You hear me talk about them each week. Check out their videos and other products on corehomefitness.com. They have got a great support team Fast shipping, hassle-free returns. They know what they're doing. The ultimate in home fitness equipment. Bring the gym to you. Don't go trudging out to the gym all the time and wasting your time in this beautiful spring and summer. Go to corehomefitness.com, get their equipment, and thank you very much for the folks at corehomefitness.com for supporting the OBR and OBR Weekly, as well as the Newswire. All right, let's go to some of the questions that we've gotten from viewers of the program, and thank you very much for submitting those. And if you have questions, fire them off. We'll be happy to queue them up here. First question we have is from Fumble 13. He says, we have an excess of defensive linemen and quarterbacks. Which position do you think Barry trades before the season for a 2025 draft pick?
Well, if I was to guess right now, I would probably say defensive lineman. I mean, he has said that, kind of like in, he used the baseball analogy, and it's like pitching, you never have enough defensive linemen. Same way with cornerbacks. There's some premium positions. But when you look at right now, you felt like after re-signing Shelby Harris, Maurice Hurst, and Quentin Jefferson, you replaced Elliott with Quentin Jefferson. So you have your rotation, you know, back from last year with Dalvin Tomlinson. Those four is usually what rotated in a game. Siaki Ika, last year's third-round pick, never got on the field because he was the fifth. Well, now you add in a top pick in Michael Hall. So you got those two trying to get in there. So if they feel that Ika or Hall or both are ready, I could see them, you know, trading Maurice Hurst off or whoever they think. I mean, Hurst's on a one-year deal. And, you know, as far as Quentin Jefferson, I think they feel like that was, a guy they wanted, so they went out and got him. I don't think they'd trade Shelby Harris. They like him a lot, too. I think they like all these guys. But as always happens, there's always injuries.
Right.
And you just, if they make a trade, it would be like at the cut deadline, I would almost think, that they don't really want to cut somebody. They want to get something out of them because they're now going to be letting go or releasing players that can help other teams. Mm-hmm. And some of their young guys, like Anika, maybe he's not ready yet, but they probably don't think they could get him back to the practice squad. Same right. way, obviously, Michael Hall would never get to a practice squad. So
no.
That's why last year, you know, it was similar to this year. On game day, I don't have it all in front of me, but I remember every game day I'd write the inactives, and there was like other injuries. Every inactive pretty much was last year's rookie draft pick. You know, mm-hmm. they were all inactive because they had to have them on the roster. You couldn't put them on the practice squad or somebody would take them, but they were just inactive every week. So I think that'll be the same thing this year. Guys they have on the team because they don't want to lose them, but they're not going to play in the games, at least at the beginning. So it'll come down to numbers. A lot of it depends on cornerback. The reason I say there, because I think you have less known commodities. You have the top three, Ward, Emerson, and Newsom. But I don't know yet if we've seen enough of Cameron Mitchell to say, okay, he's the fourth corner. He probably will be. Khalif Halasi was a guy last year they liked a lot. He was the only guy they added at the final cuts from the Chiefs. But they kept him on the roster all year, inactive, because they were afraid somebody would snatch him up. So they obviously like him. So I don't know what Miles Harden, if he'll be able to beat out one of those guys to make the team, or they feel they can get him. There's a lot of strategy on who goes to the practice squad and right. who's kept on the roster. It's guys that – like last year, they knew Dorian Thompson-Robinson could not be cut because he couldn't get him on the practice squad. That's why they traded Kellen Mond. They didn't want to keep three quarterbacks on the roster. It was a mistake, but that's what they did. They felt like a Kellen Mond or somebody like that, or I should say Josh Dobbs got traded. Kellen Mond could be on the practice squad because nobody else wanted him. So, right. So that's a good question, but I do think a lot will determine injuries in training camp in the preseason. It almost always dictates, you know, every year there's two, three, four key guys that you were counting on to either be backups or something that get injured, maybe not for the season, but they miss a few weeks of the regular season. And
right.
You just don't know about that. So I think defensive tackle, they'll err in the side of caution to keep as many as they can, proven ones.
Yeah, I'm with you, Fred. Let's get through the preseason and see who's healthy before we start dealing off players. Larry from YouTube writes, I'm not new, but was wondering when they might announce the UDFA signings. And that typically, you don't get anything official on that until those guys pass physicals, right, Fred?
Yeah, they used to announce them like in that frenzy after the draft, usually a day or two. I don't know what happened, but the last couple of years it's been like Friday morning is the opening of the rookie mini camp. They'll either announce it in a press release that morning or they'll give us the rosters when we get there.
Right.
I kind of think they'll release it officially Friday morning. Probably while I'm driving into Berea. That's usually when they send out information. But now we have guys on the staff that can cover that. I used to literally have to pull off the road to get out the laptop and try to get a story up there. So, yeah, I think it'll be Friday morning.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I would assume that you are right with that. Let's see here. Just checking some more questions. This one from our buddy E. Gillen. He writes in and he says, does Fred think AB may still be looking to acquire a season tight end? Or do they stand pat with the guys on the team in UDFAs? Logan Thomas, I think, is really the only name out there in terms of available free agents. So you're probably talking trade or something like that if you're looking to get a season tight end, right, Fred?
Well, this where, you know, the previous question about make a trade for a cornerback or a defensive tackle. Let's say you get in the preseason and other teams might have a couple good tight ends. There's somebody they're going to have to cut or let go. You know, you trade Maurice Hurst, say, for a backup tight end. You know, you use one of your assets or one of those quarterbacks. I could see that. You get a veteran tight end kind of at the last minute. They don't really – they're going to be able to be up to speed pretty quick. But, yeah, it comes down to who's available. I mean, is there somebody available that you feel is better than what you have? I mean, right now there's not much to go on with Jordan Akins. You know, and you think David Njoku, as great as he played last year and he played through getting his face burned and everything he did – if he were to get hurt, you really don't have much right now. You have Akins, and then you have a guy they've kept on the practice squad for a couple of years, Mitchell Peden. I think he's a converted basketball player, so they obviously kind of like him. I'm a little intrigued with the undrafted tight end they signed from Wyoming, Trayton Welch. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a legitimate shot to make the team as a third tight end. I don't know what the plan is for Gio Ricci. I don't know if he's a real tight end or he's more of a fullback or a blocker or what. I think he had like one pass catch in his career or something like that. So I think they'll be looking and seeing what's available, but it might not be free agents. Like you said, the list didn't look too promising. I think the last I looked, there was two or three. I don't know if Robert Tonyan was still available. Guys like that, there might be two or three guys out there. There's pretty much going to be guys at every position. That's where even at linebacker, we were talking about that earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in a Malcolm Smith type guy. If you remember him 2 or 3 years ago, they didn't sign him till training camp, and he was the second leading tackle on the team, a 30-something linebacker. Shelby Harris last year turned out to be probably maybe their best defensive tackle, him or Dalvin Tomlinson, and they didn't bring him in until after Greenbrier. So it was two weeks into training camp. He was a 30-something. So there's a lot of these 30-something guys at all positions that have played in the NFL that they have on a list that and they become kind of like bargain basement available at that time. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I do think tight end is probably the most glaring question backup behind Njoku. Not that Harrison Bryant was irreplaceable, but I do think there's guys out there you could find.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a video out there, Jack Duffin and I talking about how many tight ends are actually going to keep on the roster. And one of Jack's theories is that they may only have two tight ends on the 53-man roster, allow them to slide in an extra, you know, defensive tackle or something like that. They may not be out there looking for a third.
And they might have a couple on the practice squad too. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
They use that as kind of like your minor leagues now.
Yep. Now that you have a little bit bigger practice squad these days. Kelly Black asks, any news on DTR's injury? Any suspicion that we may see him trot out on the field during rookie camp? Since he's a injured player, he's able to play during rookie camp, or at least
I'm expecting him to be out there. I've heard that he will be. Now, they don't really have any quarterbacks. You got to have a quarterback for, you know, your rookie mini camp. I think they invited somebody, an arm. I don't even remember the name. Somebody who's been on a team before, but kind of a camp arm. So it will be interesting. DTR might be the most well-known player at the rookie mini camp. I mean, I assume Michael Hall and Zach Zinner will be there, but DTR is a guy that, you know, we'll be looking for and seeing what he looks like running around. The last we saw him, he kind of limped off the field with that hip injury, and he had to have surgery, I understand. So we'll see where he's at.
All right. So, yeah, good shot that we'll see him a little bit this weekend, and we'll see how he's doing. Stephen Glock writes in, what's with all the Treylon Burks rumors? We don't need him. You know, honestly, I haven't seen a lot of Treylon Burks rumors. I'm not sure where you're seeing those, Stephen. Write in the chat if you can let us know where the source of those are. Because I haven't seen a lot in that department. Another wide receiver just really acquiring a veteran, you know, or, you know, he was drafted 2022, I think. A young wide receiver like that just seems like sort of overkill at this point, wouldn't it, Fred? Bringing in another wide receiver with Thrasher.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more interested. I said it in that free agent offseason, you know, six steps series, is that I'm more for, at this point, somebody that you know is proven, reliable, that can step right in on the field and make plays day one. I like Jerry Jeudy, and I like the way they're going to use him, his skill set. But I still think there could be a case for a fourth, a veteran wide receiver. And I don't, Burks isn't who I have in mind. You know, what I have in mind is I don't even know who's available. But, again, the trade route, like you saw a guy like Zay Jones. I just throw that out. I mean, he's making too much money. But somebody that – a team wants to move on from in training camp or the preseason, probably an upgrade over Marquise Goodwin. You know, last year they drafted a receiver, they signed Marquise Goodwin, and they traded for Elijah Moore. They traded for Jerry Jeudy. They drafted Jamari Thrash. They haven't signed a free agent. You know, I would think the door could be open. Now, I do know this because I did ask a question with Andrew Berry is that they really are high on Cedric Tillman. And mm-hmm. so I think that they think he could be the fourth if he's not the fourth receiver, he could even push for the third receiver. And so the question is he ready right off the bat? We didn't see enough of him last year. And that's all my concern is. The only guy you look when you boil it all down on the receiving core, it's just Amari Cooper. Everybody else is upside potential. You hope Elijah Moore explodes. You hope Jerry Jeudy explodes. Cedric Tillman, but it's potential. You got David Njoku and Amari Cooper, the two pass receiving guys you can count on right now. So that's where I don't think maybe like the GM, I think like, give me a guy that's, you know, even if he's a 5, 6, 7 year, he's not the star, but he's a solid guy that would at least be your third or fourth receiver. No question. He can step right out there and play.
Right. Someone that a known producer, shall we say. Next question is from Exalted One. He asks if Joe Thomas is in Berea now. Apparently you saw him in a photograph, probably on the official site. I don't know. Can you look out for him tomorrow in Berea, Fred? See if Joe is hanging out with the rookies.
Well, if he's already got his turkey in Wisconsin, he's done, then probably he has some free time. But I have no idea if he's there. I haven't seen those photos. I don't know if when the media comes in Friday, if he has been there, if he would hang around or if he would have moved on by then. You know, it's very possible they like him and they like anybody, you know, to work with their young guys, you know, and he's well-respected, obviously, Hall of Famer, and he likes doing that kind of stuff. So I would not be surprised if he's there.
Looked like Joe Thomas was going to be a media guy there for a while, but now he seems to be switching a little bit more over to the coaching side of things. Evan Schlossberg writes in, and he says, could DeJuan Jones supplant Jack Conklin to start at right tackle? It'd be a pleasant problem to have if both of them are healthy, right, Fred?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's kind of one of those questions. Andrew Berry says, you know, he feels comfortable having three starting caliber tackles on the roster, especially with what you went through last year. So there you go again. Say you get down to the start of the season, can you afford to keep Conklin, Jones, Wills all on the roster? You know, if I took it face value, I'd say yes, because you don't want to be scrambling again, you know, for a backup. You saw what DeJuan Jones, you hate to put him on the bench, but I cannot see them, if they keep Jack Conklin, keep him on the bench as kind of your backup tackle. I don't know what he's getting paid, 10, 12 million or something. So unless they can work out a deal and they decide to move on from him. But again, you're going to have to feel good about Hudson. You know, Hudson's really not established himself, and we've had him step in to start, and he's kind of been nondescript. And this is his last year. You haven't heard any talk about extending him. So I would almost say them keep the top three and move on from somebody else, you know?
Right.
Again, it's hard for me to think that they would put DeJuan Jones back on the bench, but I don't know. That's a decision they have to make. And if you trade or cut or buy out Conklin, then you're kind of put yourself in the same situation with really no backup unless you're comfortable with Hudson again.
Right, right. Or put them both out there. Play that big offensive line, two big right tackles. Here's Sancho Bermuda. Open-ended question here. What's the best thing the Browns have going for them? If you had to say what's the best thing the Browns have going for them right now, what would you say it is, Fred?
Well, if just one thing, I'd say Jim Schwartz and that defense. I think The defense is going to keep you in games. And they would have won a lot more games if the offense would have got going. That's why they made changes, because it just didn't really look much different 2 years with Alex Van Pelt, you know, in the offense. It seems like Kevin Stefanski and his background is more suited for the style of like Joe Flacco, you know, and we saw it really take off. That's why they made the decision they did to bring in Ken Dorsey and to go to more of a spread offense, because this is what Deshaun Watson really is more comfortable running, is running 4 or 5 wide receivers at a time and just kind of quick routes, choice routes, they call it. You know, make a quick read and get the ball out. Just boom, 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 boom. Not a lot of, you know, scripted plays. More of a, not street ball, but to some degree, more of like a wide open, you know, spread offense. So I think that the defense you can count on being keeping you in game. So
yeah,
it's all in the offense to score more than 20 a game. If they could score 24 or more a game, I think they'll win, you know, double digit games this year, even with a tough schedule.
All right. I think that's fair. Sorry for disappearing on you briefly. I think the best thing the Browns have going for them right now is stability at the top with their head coach and their GM, you know, working together. I'm an AB fan, and not just because he picked the player I wanted in this year's draft. We got another open question from Sancho here. I'd like to hear you answer. In your experience, who are the best players that you've covered on the defensive side of the ball during your tenure, Fred?
Oh, my. I mean, we go back to Michael Dean Perry, you know, on the old Browns, Hanford Dixon, Frank Minifield, great corners. I covered Lyle Alzado at the tail end of his career. So I've been around a while. I'd have to almost see a list because there's a lot of people I've covered. But Jamar Miller, you know, the new regime since 99 was pretty good. Had injuries, kind of derailed him. But, you know, I'd have to go back to those 80s teams, you know, with Minifield, Dixon, and then Michael Dean Perry when he played. And we had a lot. Belichick brought in a lot of guys that, you know, at the end of their careers, Pepper Johnson and Willie McGinnis. They weren't in their prime, but
was Clay Matthews.
Clay Matthews, yeah. When you bring it up, I'd say Clay Matthews right now. He might be the best, you know, that I covered. Just consistent. I mean, I got a lot of years to draw. There's 30 years off and on in there, so, or more than 30 years. So, good question. I have to think about that a little bit more.
You think Myles Garrett might have the chance to be that?
Well, yeah, I wasn't talking about current. Sure, Myles Garrett could be the best all time, you know, Brown, you know, in defense.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got that. Got that potential still. Evan Schlossberg again asks, what's the point of bringing back Cade York? Kind of confusing, he says. Unless our starting kicker gets hurt, Cade York seems like, you know, why is he here?
Well, they like to have a guy on the practice squad. I think going back to the COVID years when a guy would get COVID and they didn't have a kicker. So they've kind of had that. They've had Lucas Havrasek. They had him on the practice squad last year, even after the trade of Dustin Hopkins. And he got signed off the Browns practice squad to the Rams. And he was the Rams kicker. The Rams let him go at the end of the year. The Browns signed him. So Lucas Havrasek, as far as I know, he's still on the roster. And then Cade York became available. I expect them to let one of probably Havrasek go. But I think they just as far as York, they just really, really like him. I mean, you had to like him highly to draft him in the fourth round.
Yeah.
And I've seen him. I mean, he's booting the ball from 60 yards. He makes them all. He gets in the game last year in preseason. He couldn't make them.
Right.
I mean, I would have made the move they made. But he was out there. He was available, and he wanted to come back. So I think in the perfect world, you know, you got Dustin Hopkins this year, $3 million, proven guy in the last year of his contract. And Cade York might see the opportunity, and the Browns would see, let him spend a year with Hopkins, mimicking him. I mean, the kickers at some point get that. They get it, and it clicks where, you know, like Hopkins has got like ice in his veins. I mean, nothing phases the guy. York kind of talked like he did, but obviously it was affecting him in the game. You know, he'd get in the game and he'd, you know, and he would shank it or whatever, trying too hard or whatever. So we've all seen it with kickers. Once they click, they're golden. You know, that Carlson kid, he got cut by the Vikings because they drafted him, golden leg. He missed a couple extra points and they cut him. Well, then he went to the Pro Bowl like every year since for the Raiders, you know. So they see that with York. And, I mean, in a perfect world, I think they would like to have insurance policy and feel good enough about York to move on at the end of this year, you know, from Hopkins. If they feel good enough that York is now ready to go. And we saw, you know, how devastating it was when Hopkins pulled the hamstring.
Right.
He's had hamstring injuries. That's one of the reasons the Chargers let him go, is because he had missed several games with hamstring injuries. Right. So that's all I can think. You know, if everybody's proven and likes York and he's on the practice squad, somebody will pick him up. But they're not going to have two kickers on the active roster. But I would say York is the door's open for him to reclaim his career with the Browns.
All right. Well, let's continue the kickoff questions. This will be the last question of the night. This comes from Kelly. The question is, will the kickoff rule changes make a big difference on who gets the last roster spots? Interesting question.
I think it's an unknown. Nobody really knows. They're speculating that you might need bigger guys like linebackers and guys like that on special teams, as opposed to wide receivers, you know, running backs, cornerbacks, the smaller guys, because they might not have the head of steam, you know, in a short period of space, and you might be able to get guys that can get them on the ground. So I don't know. I think they're all trying to figure it out, but sure. And it could also have a lot more play on practice squad, you know, knowing you can bring guys up, guys that are almost like special team specialists, you know, that's pretty much all they do. And they come up on game day.
Right. And yeah, you'll still need a couple of gunners for punts, but for kickoffs, you don't need as many guys running the 40 as fast as they possibly can. Right. With this new kickoff rule, it's going to be really interesting. Yeah. I'm not sure if I like it yet. I don't like change in general. So, you know, we'll see if I can adapt to this or not, or if I'll just be grumpy old man all season. All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for your comments and questions. Just a couple we couldn't get to this week. Terrific as always. Thank you very much for hanging out with Fred and I tonight, talking Cleveland Browns. And thank you always, Fred, Sensei Fred, for your comments and your thoughts this evening, per usual. We'll be, I was going to say we'll be back next week, but I don't know if we will, because the schedule will be coming out, I think, next Wednesday, the 15th. And if so, we'll probably have a special schedule show that day. We'll have to see how all this shakes out, you know, with the schedule release and all that.
You're not going to bump me for the schedule. I know the schedule.
Well, maybe we'll go at 7 and schedule show at 8. Maybe
they announce it at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, so we'll get that figured out. But
beyond here, we'll have it all. We'll have it all leaked.
Exactly. We've done it before.
I think I will have in my hands by then what's going on. So
yeah, absolutely.
We'll teach you.
Exactly. We'll either see you next Wednesday night at 7 or we won't. we'll figure it out over the course of this next week. But thanks for hanging with us. We'll see you soon on OBR Weekly. Thank you to CoreHomeFitness.com. Good night, everybody.
Thanks. See you next week.